A few months ago, the Dalai Lama spoke at the University of California, San Diego, and along with a few thousand other people, I was there to hear his remarks. He's a really, first time I've heard him in person, and he truly is a powerfully wonderful human being. At the end of his address, people were invited to come up and ask him questions. And one woman asked him, what should be our response to the harsh and divisive cultural and political climate today? What would he advise as to how we can face and deal with and try to heal this divisive, harsh, hating climate that we're in? And he said, and this is the first thing, he said other things, but I almost didn't hear those other things because the first thing he said really hit me hard. He said, avoid harsh speech. Avoid harsh speech. Well, I checked my Facebook feed that morning, and it was just harsh speech. It seemed to be all there was there. You know, a few pictures of last night's meal and stuff, but mostly it was harsh political commentary. And so my political leanings tend left, so it was harsh, almost hateful left speech. But I have a few conservative friends left, and they posted some harsh right speech. And it seems like all we have is wrong speech. The Buddha described right speech as having three criteria. It's true. Is it true, you ask? Is it helpful? And is it timely? And I don't see a lot of right speech in our public discourse and even in our private lives sometimes. Our media, our politics, our news, our entertainment is just filled with harsh speech. And you know, that extreme rhetoric fires up harsh thoughts and harsh actions and hatreds. And it's harmful. It's extremely harmful. It's the beginning of a violence. And both sides of the political spectrum are engaging in it. The Buddha taught a way to liberation, a way to awakening. He called it the Ennobling Eightfold Path. So the first two are right understanding that the actions and thoughts that we have right now have consequences into the future. And right thought, which means noticing what you're thinking and acting only in the thoughts that are beneficial. He also talks about three parts of the path that deal with morality, and those are right action, which means you act in ways that don't hurt others, and there are specific precepts for that. And right livelihood, you don't take part in livelihood that harms others. And then right speech. And all three of these are based on principles of not harming. Of those, in my experience and the experience of a lot of people who seriously practice Buddhism, right speech is the most difficult because there's so many nuances to it. There's clear, don't speak harshly and don't speak lies. But if you look more closely at what the Buddha taught, it gets pretty subtle. And if you look at it closely, you see that we are always doing wrong speech. If the Buddhist morality has a different attitude toward making those kinds of mistakes. They don't say wrong so much as unskillful. So the Ten Commandments are put in legalistic terms. Guilty, innocent, right, wrong, bad, good. In Buddhism, the morality is a goal, and you can have skillful actions and unskillful actions. And how do you know? Well, some of it you know, and you might deceive yourself and do some unskillful things. And some of it you know because you see the results of some unskillful actions that you've done in the past. So one way of putting it is really, in Western religious traditions, it's often said that we're punished for our sins by some outside agency. In Buddhist tradition, it's more like we're punished by our sins. And of course, we have control of our actions now. The consequences of our previous actions are going to come, but we can have the freedom to choose our future well-being by our current thoughts, our current actions, our current speech. So while I cringed writing this sermon, knowing in many ways that I have subtly perhaps, or maybe not so subtly, violated some of these principles of right speech, it helps to know that it's a practice and not a perfection. So the Buddha identified three kinds of speech that are particularly unskillful. The first is gossip. And here it's defined as speaking negatively about another person when that person is not present. So you have to admit, there's some joy or there's some fun in being snarky about somebody who's not there with someone else. It's like that old saying, if you can't say anything good about someone, sit here next to me. But let's look at this. When you say something negative about another person, it may not be true, it may be exaggerated, or even if it might be true, you are harming the listener's perception of that person. That sticks your perception of that person, the negative things you say about that person, sticks in your hearer's mind. And the next time you see that, they see the person you're talking about, they're going to have a different view, either subtly or more directly, of that person. And it's going to hurt them. It's going to hurt the relationship that your hearer has with that person. So it's not so innocent and fun as we think. So if you've seen the movie or the play Doubt, there's a character there who's a priest. It's a very good play or movie. If you haven't seen it, I recommend it. The priest character in one of his sermons talks about gossip. And he tells a story of a woman who comes to confession and confesses to gossiping negatively about her neighbors. And she expects the priest to give her a penance and then she can just walk out and be done. But he doesn't do that. He says, before I can give you absolution, a penance and an absolution, you need to go to the roof of your building and take a feather pillow and cut it open and let the wind take all the feathers and come back. So she does. And she says, Father, I did what you said. And he says, great, now go and find all those feathers and put them back. And she said, that's impossible. And he said, that's gossip. The second kind of unskillful speech is dishonest speech. And of course, most specifically, it's not saying something that you know is true, is untrue, with the intent to deceive another person for your own advantage. So outright lying, of course, is wrong speech, unskillful speech. But there are other kinds of false speech, dishonest speech, than just outright lying. There's half-truth. There's innuendo. There's exaggeration. I have to deal with this, too. A couple of decades ago, my wife gave me a birthday present. It was a license to exaggerate. I might have a tendency that way. So that's been a practice for me to have that certificate and thinking, do I really need this license to exaggerate? So before this sermon, I've never said this word that I'm about to say from the pulpit before, but I didn't say it first. I'm quoting. There's a Princeton philosopher, a retired Princeton philosopher. His name is Harry G. Frankfurt. Some years ago, he wrote a wonderful little book about a form of dishonest speech. It doesn't take long to read. Actually, he was interviewed on 60 Minutes about this book. And excuse the coarseness, but the book is titled On Bullshit. All right. Now, what's the difference between BS and it's not the same as lying, okay? BS is not the same as lying. A liar knows he's lying. He's saying something that he knows to be untrue with the intent of deceiving someone else. The bullshitter doesn't know or care if she's lying. She's just saying whatever suits her purpose with no worry at all or no concern at all about the truth or untruth of what's said. Doesn't care about the difference between truth and untruth. And our society is riddled with BS. It's riddled with BS. And it's riddled with dishonesty. And it goes down at all levels of our society. From our news media, you know, we can argue about which is false news and which is not false news. But also some of the oldest, most respected, used to be, companies in our nation are practicing dishonesty. Just think about Wells Fargo. This is one of the oldest banks in the country with a solid reputation, and they were doing immense fraud. Our recession was caused in large part by what some brokers called liars' loans. Liar's loans. So what is a liar's loan? And everybody was colluding in this. This is where someone would sign a piece of paper saying that they had such and so income and knowing that was untrue to get a mortgage that they couldn't afford. And the banks knew it was untrue. The person taking responsibility and signing the document knew it was untrue. And of course, the whole bubble collapsed. It's like everybody's doing it. You have to be so careful as a consumer to not be taken in by some promise. If you look more deeply, it just benefits the seller and doesn't benefit you. Harvard ethicist Cicela Bock wrote a book called Lying, and she talks about the moral atmosphere of a society. So just as we breathe a literal atmosphere, and that atmosphere can get polluted, which does harm to us, but that pollution doesn't come from only one source. It comes from my car. It comes from a power plant. It comes from the plane I took. It comes from people who are violating anti-pollution laws. It all adds up, and it's the same effect on us in our breathing. All the BS, all the lies, all the deceptions, all the exaggerations, they're polluting our moral atmosphere now. And we're choking. We're choking. So there's really a lot of dishonest speech going on. So to be right speech, it must be helpful. It must be true. And it must be kind. We all, it's hard enough to just to be scrupulously honest, but right speech is not just about being honest. It's also about being helpful. I think we've all been the victims of speech that the speaker felt was absolutely honest, but which hurt. Brutal honesty. There's even a phrase for it. Brutal honesty. And we've all been the victims of brutal honesty. Maybe we've been the perpetrators of brutal honesty. I'll say what I think. In the Love Lab at the University of Washington, Dr. John Gottman has been studying couples for decades. So what he does is he puts couples in a room, kind of a little apartment, and he and his researchers watch what they do in their interactions, and they kind of keep track of what's being said. And he got to the point where he could identify 4 behaviors that predicted divorce with great accuracy. And they're all forms of unskillful speech. So the first is criticism. The second is defensiveness, which makes sense. It's the opposite of, goes with criticism. Contempt and sarcasm, and stonewalling, which is not even engaging with your partner. So these are all unskillful, unkind forms of speech that sabotage our marriages, our relationships. Now, we know that contempt and sarcasm intended to hurt is wrong, but what about criticism? Isn't criticism helpful? Aren't there times when other people need our criticism, our constructive criticism? Right. So flip that around. Are there times when we welcome constructive criticism? How often does that happen? Okay, other people do need to be, maybe you do need to give them some feedback that might be hard to hear. But much, much less often than most of us think. People that are free with their criticism, think about it. They don't have many friends. They're not fun to be with at all. And of course, they contributed to our own irresponsibility of not wanting to hear the truth that will only do us good. Charles Schwab said, "I have yet to find a person, however exalted their position, who didn't do better work and put forth greater effort under a spirit of approval than under a spirit of criticism." Several years ago, there was a book written by one of the trainers at SeaWorld who trains the killer whales. And she decided to use the same reinforcement techniques that she used to train the killer whales to do tricks to get her husband to change. So she applied this technique, and what she did was she didn't criticize. She quit giving negative feedback at all because she knows that negative feedback also reinforces some behavior sometimes that you don't want. So, but she always praised him lavishly and rewarded him for doing things right. And you know what? It works for whales, it works for husbands, and it worked for her. She changed as a result of this interaction. She became a better spouse, a better person. The relationship improved. So we do need to criticize sometimes, but often much less than we think. And the idea here is to not do it unless you've thoroughly agonized about whether it's the right thing to do. In other words, it's not casual, it's not off the top of your head. These are the words of the Buddha about how to admonish someone. Before admonishing one another, one should reflect thus: in due season will I speak, not out of season. In other words, not at the end of when your partner comes home from a really bad day. That's not the time. Find a time when they're open to hearing and ask them. I'm providing commentary. The Buddha didn't say the last part. Okay. In due season will I speak, not out of season. In truth will I speak, not in falsehood. Gently will I speak, not harshly. For his benefit will I speak, not for his loss. In kindness will I speak, not in anger. The psychiatrist Alice Miller said, if it's hard for you to admonish another, it's safe to do so. If you get the least bit of pleasure out of it, you should refrain. I said right speech was a difficult practice. So does this mean that we should avoid all difficult conversations? Oh, that can be a bad policy as well. If we value our relationships, then we will sometimes need to tell other people some truths as we see them, however difficult they may be. So we need to do it carefully. We need to look at our intentions carefully and then tell the truth. And without calling names or attributing motives, and that's hard to do. Because we've all had therapy. We've read books about psychology. We can diagnose their pathologies very easily, whether that's true or not, whether we're qualified or not. But it's best not to attribute motives, but to stick to observed actions. And then tell your truth. This is what you did. This is what you said. And this was the result. This is how I felt. This is how it hurt. And it's better to do it when you're not in the throes of that negative emotion. Don't attribute motives. Don't throw up names. So, if you're like me, you probably realize that you might be using unskillful speech every day. So, the most helpful thing is not to judge yourself. It's helpful to observe and ask yourself, why? What happened? Why did that unskillful speech arise? Was it because you felt a little uncomfortable or unsafe and you felt like you needed to control the relationship, control the situation? Is it just a habit that you learned from your family of origin that you haven't really examined or asked if that habit still serves you? Did it serve your parents to fill the moral atmosphere of the house with unskillful speech? Does it serve you? Is it because you need to be right? Well, there's an old saying among marriage counselors, you can be right or you can be married. How does it make you feel when you use wrong speech? Are you contributing to the peace and happiness of your family, your relationship, your friendship, your workplace? What about exaggeration or manipulation and other forms of falsehood or gossip? You know, I'm speaking here of speaking negatively about another person when they're not there. Why? Why is there a need to do that? Paying attention to speech patterns and making those quite natural changes that will come from just seeing, noticing what intentions that unskillful speech comes from and the results. The change will just happen. Your speech will help to create friendship, understanding, intimacy, love, more and more and more. I think the Dalai Lama is right on this, as he is on so many other things. One way that we can change the world and the situation we find ourselves in right now is to refrain from harsh speech, refrain from unskillful speech. Because this will contribute not only to healing ourselves and our relationships, it will contribute to the healing of the world. May it be so. Amen.